does have it all. All of our pre-owned vehicles are Hubler Q certified, which include a 128-point vehicle inspection, a free Carfax vehicle history report, and two warranties. A two-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty, and a 30-day, 1,000-mile comprehensive warranty. Visit any of our 13 locations today, or click drivehubler.com. Hubler has it
all. This morning on the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy.
Colts are back to work. Offseason program underway. Week one of that. We're still about a month away from OTAs beginning. And again, that will be the first opportunity for Anthony Richardson to get back on the field in some of these team-like settings in front of coaches. 7-on-7, 11-on-11. And we'll see just how much the activity looks like for him. But it does sound like there will be some participation here this spring, and a man that's worked with him extremely close over the last couple of off seasons. He is the quarterback coach for Anthony Richardson, courtesy of the QB Collective. You heard him on with us last year after the draft, and he joins us now. He is Will Hewlett. Will, good morning. Before we dive into Richardson-specific stuff, just a little bit of background, if you don't mind, for our listeners that might have missed last year. Certainly you've had work with some other former Colts quarterbacks, i.e. Gardner Minshew, but just a little bit of background on your work with Anthony and other quarterbacks.
Yeah, absolutely. And Sam Ellinger as well. I've been kind of in the private training sector, I guess you could say, for the past almost 20 years now. A couple of the clients we've had over the past couple of years, we had Brock Purdy the year prior to Anthony. We had Ian Book from Notre Dame the year prior to that. This year we had Caleb Williams, Jordan Travis, and a couple other guys. And then we work with a number of, you know, different NFL quarterbacks across the country, do the draft prep things. And so really kind of just serve as the off-season, training coach for quarterbacks that are, you know, not with their team currently. So when they're getting ready for the regular season, they're usually doing it with some kind of training team and facility, and that's kind of my role.
Again, he is Will Hewlett, quarterback coach Anthony Richardson. A little bit of background there from Will. Let's just start what's different. This time last year when we spoke with you, the stuff you were working on specifically exiting Florida versus now this year. Yes, it's just 173 snaps. Yes, it's coming off the injury. But what is different about what you've wanted to kind of instill and drill in him here in 2024 versus 2023?
Yeah, I mean, I think for Anthony, like all the rookies last year, he's not a rookie anymore. And regardless of the limited amount of play, I think he was able to get enough under his belt to really build a confidence. There was just kind of a certain aura about him this time coming back where, not that he ever could question that he would be able to do it before, but he went out there and he did it and did it at a high level. And I think he was really excited by, some of the progress and things that he was able to do on the field. So this offseason, in spite of coming back from an injury, I think he was feeling pretty good about, where it was all going. Obviously there's going to be those question marks when you're coming back from some kind of a surgery, how things are going to work as you come back to your returning to throw. Yeah, I think, we're many steps forward than where we were last offseason. I think there was kind of a narrative out there coming out of Florida. Could the kid throw a ball that was wouldn't hit the dirt? It was inconsistent. And, obviously that wasn't the case. And he worked extremely hard in perfecting his craft. Those little things he had to tighten up. He had to get better at certain parts of the throwing game. But he really paid attention to the small details and made massive progress that past off season. So we really just picked back up where he left off from this past season, except for, maybe limited volume and controlled throwing because of the returning from the injury.
We're talking to Anthony Richardson, his quarterback coach, Will Hewlett, joining us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline on the Fan on this Thursday. If I could pin you down on, I don't know, if it would be a play, a game, or just a few plays that you watch Anthony last year. Again, we know before the injuries, and he had a couple of them last year, Will, but he still did get over 150 snaps. Was there anything, or what were the things, I guess I should say, when you watched him that rookie year, you said, yeah, that's it. He gets it. That's something we worked on. That's one reason he's going to be so good in the NFL.
Yeah, I think there was a couple moments. I think it was a preseason game against the Bills. I believe he might have actually thrown a pick early, but then he just settled down and played ball, and he was able to complete, you know, little dink and dunk throws, move through progressions, make a couple runs, and he just kind of, you know, went into a space that you're looking for quarterbacks to do, just get the flow of the game, and that was immediately like, okay, he's got this. Now, it's a preseason game. Obviously, other games are, you know, a little bit more, you know, the regular season games are a little bit more intense. There was a game, I think it was, I believe there was a throw he made. It might have been against the Rams, but where he ripped a 35-yard seam ball. And the funny thing was, is it was a type of throw that, you know, well, he made a couple of those that you were a little bit like, wow, that was really impressive. But when I talked to him about it in the offseason, this current offseason, what was interesting about it was it wasn't even in the progression. It was kind of one of those plays where he saw safety creeping. He gave his receiver the nod, and they were able to kind of go a little off schedule and hit a big gain for a touchdown. So stuff like that, you know, when you're playing at that kind of level as a rookie, you know, you've got that kind of feel for the game. You know, I just knew after talking to him this offseason and watching what I saw during the season that he's going to be a great one.
Yeah, that ball to Josh Downs in that Rams game, that was certainly... Yeah.
I'm watching it right now.
Yeah, that was arguably the best play he had all season in hell in that Rams game. He had another one with Aaron Donald draped on him that certainly stood out as well. Again, Will Hewlett is joining us here from the QB Collective. He is the quarterback coach for Anthony Richardson. We spoke with Will last year just after the draft. And Will, I remember then kind of the focus was, all right, Andy's my co-host here. He's certainly not Anthony Richardson. Anthony Richardson has got to understand the different velocities in throwing the ball under 20 yards, you know. And it wasn't necessarily like you're only throwing a fastball. Don't do that. Do you feel like you've seen progression there in, again, understanding the different velocities needed for some of the shorter intermediate throws?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think, again, when you kind of bank a year of training, you know, and you kind of really dig into how your throw works and start to feel things out and then play some ball, you just inch along and you move along the curve in terms of understanding that. And so he's got a level of intuitiveness in how he operates, where I believe that area is already better. We did, you know, we were joking around because we were talking about some of Brock Purdy's throws over the middle that he makes where everyone kind of holds their breath. And he's like, I got to work on that part of my game. I'm not quite there yet. But he's in terms of just base level consistency, being able to throttle his throw in terms of velocity and accuracy, it's better than it was last year.
Will we notice anything different motion wise coming off the injury, or I guess even just fundamentally footwork, base, anything like that?
I don't think you'll see anything differently up top. I think that's going to look relatively the same, which is kind of what we want. It's kind of a blessing, you know, coming back from an injury. I think he's going to, you know, we worked on a couple small things from in the lower body this offseason, just building a consistency, playing maybe a little bit more relaxed up top, maybe the only difference. But, yeah, I think, you know, the real focal point for Anthony now is just being able to kind of tie his feet to all the progressions, making sure that he's on time from the first read to the second read, to the third read. And then, you know, just getting that you know, feel back of when that ball's going to come out and the kind of timing. I think, you know, rolling into OTAs and that kind of stuff, depending on what his involvement is in that, you know, he'll knock some of the rust off through that. So I think he's in a really good space going into this next season.
Anthony Richardson's quarterback coach, Will Hewlett, joining us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Will, I might be wrong here, but I don't know. I mean, in your time doing this with quarterbacks, it, you know, felt like a number of years ago, guys would leave college, and it's like, okay, you need to conform to the NFL game. You're going to kind of shed your college football skin, and you're going to go to the NFL game, and you're going to conform to what they do. And then somewhere, I don't know if it was definitely within the last decade or so, I would say, Will, it's different, right? It's now, the NFL is going to conform to some of the things and some of the ideas that the college game is doing. Do you see it that way, and how has that changed your job?
Yeah, absolutely. I see it that way. I think there's still some systems that operate, you know, for the with a more traditional quarterback, and by traditional, I mean kind of just drop back, run second, maybe not even run second. It's like pass first, pass second, pass third, then run. You got kind of the operator, the guy that's going to get you the right play. And then there's this evolution of a more dynamic, running quarterback. But I want to be careful by saying, like, I don't think Anthony should be lumped in a category of a guy that should run before he passes as well. Like, I do feel like, he's as good in the pocket as we've seen in terms of coming out of college in quite some time, with his ability to navigate through pressure. He just happens to be one of the freakiest athletes in the world. So it would be detriment to the Colts to not be able to utilize him in the run game.
Sure.
Essentially what that allows, the Colts offense to do is the defense has to play. You can try and spy him. You can, that's probably not going to work. But they have to account for a six, runner. But then he can also, throw the heck out of the ball. So I think when coaches are dealing with the dynamic quarterbacks these days, they still have to be able to throw the ball effectively. Otherwise, it's, kind of just a one-trick pony. So I believe that, the evolution from college to, more guys are just getting an opportunity. The offenses are kind of, predicated around the quarterback being able to run in certain situations. And so from supply and demand, you've got more guys than ever that are able to run the ball. So the NFL better adapt in some capacity, and they have. Like Shane Steichen, I think, has done a phenomenal job blending a really creative style of offense with, run pass option plays, pure drop back, and then other ways to get Anthony in space. So you're seeing that in the league, and I think it's kind of here to stay.
Will, really enjoyed this combo. I appreciate your time, not only last year, kind of giving us a little bit of background on exactly where your focus was with Anthony Richardson, but now heading into year two. It's kind of funny how you mentioned him as a passer. That was the Chris Ballard big takeaway from last season. Yes, just 173 snaps, but if there's something Ballard said he came away maybe a little bit more impressed with, was that he feels like he can be a high-level passer in this league. So I found that interesting as well.
Yes, sir. No, absolutely. Well, I appreciate y'all having me on. And I'm real excited to watch the Colts compete this year and see how boy Anthony does. Big things in store for that man. He's gifted and just a great person, among other things. So it'd be fun to watch.
About an hour from now, we'll have ESPN draft analyst Matt Miller join us here. I don't think the name we're about to talk about, Andy, is going to be there at number 15, but I guess this qualifies a little bit in the trade-up category. And one thing I did want to mention, this time yesterday we were dealing with the DeForest Buckner, flexibility with his cap space discussion. Remember that?
And, oh, yeah.
We obviously had Stephen Holder on at the time. He was a little unsure about it and did some digging and thought that the additional cap space that the Colts created in their structure of the Buckner extension will just be rolled over to 2025, not going to lead to some big move. Again, maybe I'm trying to separate my head from my heart with this sort of thought, but I wanted to think a little bit more about that. Why would they do something they haven't done in terms of backloading the contract, creating more cap space a month into the offseason? You know, if you do this at the start of the new league year, okay, that makes sense. You know, maybe Danielle Hunter all of a sudden is a guy that you want to bring in and you want to have some flexibility. We saw the rumor of them trading up. Peter Schrager had that in his mock draft to number 9 overall. If you look at that, Andy, the difference between the number 9 rookie contract versus the number 15 rookie contract, that difference is about $8
million. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, again, I'm probably grasping here, but I'm just trying to provide a little bit more of like, all right, here's some flexibility. A week from tonight, if all of a sudden the board starts to fall in a certain way, you didn't think insert player's name here would be there at 7, would be there at 8, would be there at 9, and you got the urge to trade up, would you be able to do it financially? So, again, it's probably not going to happen, but I did want to make sure that we threw that in there of just, okay, they do have flexibility. So if something happens a week from tonight, they can at least answer those calls, entertain those calls, where before the Buckner extension happened, it was probably a waste of time for them to even answer the call.
I would imagine tomorrow at noon, this is the thing that you want to ask Chris Ballard about the most. Would be why they did, or you know, why
yeah,
they did what they did
gonna,
with
I mean,
Buckner.
He's
not going to give you anything.
He never gets into contractual stuff.
I know he doesn't, but he also, if they do move up, it's like he kind of tipped his hand.
Yeah,
like if that were to happen, it would be like, hey, kind of a week and a half ago, you know, if we talk about it being next week around the NFL draft, maybe he tips his hand. I wanted to ask you this. So we're going to talk, hit the open, Mark. Here's our Colts on the clock.
The Colts are on the clock.
Now it's official.
There we go.
Now we can talk about it.
Now we can talk about Dallas Turner, the edge rusher there from Alabama. Every mock draft has him going inside the top 10. Every single mock draft has him being the first defensive player off the board. And I would say, KB, you tell me, 98%, 99% have him going number 8 overall to the Atlanta Falcons and Raheem Morris building that team and everything else. I wanted to ask you this. Obviously, we know Turner's great. He's best friends with Will Anderson Jr. We know him with the Houston Texans. So, you know, if you're going to take Will Anderson, you take Dallas Turner from one guy to the next. It's a good problem they have at Alabama where you can stack that much talent. The question I had for you was, and you almost got to it. I thought you were going to ask me this there a second ago. If you ever got to 9, Peter Schrager had the Colts moving up to take Malik Nabers at 9. 9, 10, wherever it may be, right around there, 8, 9, 10. If you had the choice between Turner or Nabers, where would you go? And this is not going to happen.
Yeah.
This is very much a sports radio question that I'm throwing out there to have fun with. It's not going to happen to where both of those guys would be there at like 9 or 10.
Probably
to where
95%
Ballard,
of people would say Nabers.
Yeah, well,
and it's
you?
The support for Richardson.
Would you? Because that's a tough one, because I don't know.
I'm probably in the 5%.
You're in the 5%,
and,
yeah.
You know, I've made this analogy before. I don't know if it's the perfect one, but you know, you're walking into the gas station and you've got two candy bars that you have to get both of them, and one's got one candy bar left on the shelf and the other's got 8 or 9. And that's kind of how wide receivers viewed. I mean, Ballard said it to us at the Combine. This is a generational wide receiver draft class. And, you know, I think when you look at the elite rushers in this league, many of them are drafted very, very high. You look at the elite wideouts and you've got a few more names that are a little bit later in the draft. So, having said that, and I know I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth when I answer it, John and I were talking about this yesterday. If you do anything to support Anthony Richardson in a substantial manner, they will get zero complaining from me. Zero complaining. If it's Bowers at 15, if it's Brian Thomas
right,
at 15.
Right. You'll be praised.
No. Yeah. I mean, you support. I also think you have to be a realist and understand there's a better chance wideout gets you a future number one slot in round 2, round 3 than edge rusher. And I know people have countered and been like, Ballard's drafted terrible at edge rusher, so why would you waste a pick there? Just because you have swung and missed numerous times doesn't mean you stop swinging. Hell, if you want to play the game like Mark seemingly plays with the Reds bets, if they keep on losing, sooner or later they're going to win.
One time.
That is the thing. You know, bettors bet for things to end, for streaks to end, not for streaks to keep going. You're supposed to bet the streaks to keep going, but I'm with Mark. A lot of times I do it the other way. I mean, listen, Dallas Turner's a beast. You saw it. I mean, all SEC, first team All-American and everything else. Dane Brugler of The Athletic, who we had on last week. I'm looking at his breakdown on the beast. The only drawback, and again, this is nitpicking when you're talking about one of these top prospects, is they want him to be a little bit more patient. Sometimes he goes off sides a little bit, and they think he'll kind of grow into his body a little bit. Again, this guy's like 6'3". He's like 6'3", 255. So he might grow into his body. Unfortunately for me, we've done this scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the highest. You think the Colts could get him? I have this one at like a 0.5, and it's simply because I think this guy is the first guy off the board. I cannot see him dropping enough to where the Colts would even think about moving up. Does that make sense? And I don't know. I guess it's just me. Ballard, if you think... Yeah, if maybe Ballard even thought, hey, I haven't drafted well at this position, maybe that even more so means he would draft them in middle rounds. I think they will go maybe with an end somewhere. I know he's your man crush. I just don't see it happening. He had 11 sacks last year at Alabama. That's a huge number in college.
Led the SEC.
A huge number.
And it's not like that Alabama D-line had four first-round picks. No. You know, some of these years it's been like, well, I mean, look at their D-line. That Alabama line last year wasn't thought of in that light. I think specifically with Turner, a reason why I do like him so much, Andy, is because there's speed and there's length. And just the combination of that is, I think, what is missing off the edge. To me, they've been a little bit too power rushy off the edge. And I think if to me, what you're trying to do with that defensive line group is you're trying to have a starting pitcher with four different pitches across that line. Some week you want maybe the power guy to be lined up outside. Some weeks, maybe you want the speed guy to be lined up internally based off your opposing offensive line. And I just don't feel like they've had that outside pitch, that speed, bendy, edge-rushing sort of guy. And again, I think Turner has got an ability to do that. But, you know, I'll stop speaking in dreams and speak more in reality. Yeah, 2.4.
This is a zero for me. Okay. Zero.
Yeah, but 2.4 is a big number for you. Like, I did 0.5 and Mark's doing zero. 2.4, you're the captain.
It's 2.4. Let's not act like I said 9.8 here.
You might as well have with our numbers.
I mean, yeah. Don't you get some points for writing your name on the paper?
It's like wasn't that the SATs? Didn't you get so many points?
That's
zero.
What they told you.
They're still not doing SAT and ACT. That got done away with, right? Am I wrong with that?
Really?
Scantrons went by the wayside. I don't know if
for
SATs.
Some reason I thought the standardized test went away at some universities.
What the hell?
But I could be wrong. I don't know.
Well, no wonder less people are going to college.
Well, ask your students today.
I guess you're right.
Well, no,
they'll be
the
showing me Umar
ACTs?
Ballo pictures at upstairs instead.
Him and his 1.2
kids, you guys still take standardized tests? What's going? What do I do here?
Drinks on Ballo.
Do you do tests at your class?
Great question.
Five assignments over the course of the semester, but no, there's no test. There's no final.
You should whip out a Scotty Pop quiz.
I mean, let's be honest. I've got 18 kids in the class today, and it's Thursday, a little five. How many of the 18 show up?
Oh, goodness. Yeah, get a Scotty Pop quiz this day.
I'll say 11.
70-degree day in Bloomington. It's Thursday, a little 500. The class 11. Starts at noon.
Man.
11 of 18 show up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say, you know what? If we put the over-under at 11.5, I'll take the over. I will believe in the young minds there at IU Bloomington.
I do teach in the closest building to Kirkwood, so maybe they view it as bring nothing to class, show up there, and then just slide right over to the bars.
Right. You do take attendance. Do you take attendance? You have to, don't you?
I do,
you? Okay,
yes.
Well, there you go.
It's probably one of the few things I'm actually
They probably look
on.
Forward to it because you're the celebrity on campus. They're like, Kevin Bowen's here. We
oh
got to be there.
He's going to ask Chris Ballard a question tomorrow at noon.
So are we going to get a Caitlin Clark logo along
yes.
with the shoe?
Yeah, I
would
mean,
assume
you
so.
Saw the Wembanyama logo's awesome.
I can the already
how
see.
How would you describe that? Like a
alien.
Little alien-like?
No, it's an alien. He is an alien, so that makes total sense.
Wouldn't it be like the heart thing?
Oh,
it's like,
no.
It kind of looks like two C's, Caitlin Clark, when you put it together.
I actually...
does that make sense?
I can see what you're doing there.
People, sure.
It's a
people
good
know
idea.
Her doing it.
Yeah, I could see something along those lines there. I'm kind of fascinated to see, like, I don't know, like, will they make the shoe in, like, youth sizes? I mean, you imagine how many?
Of course they will. Yeah, of course they will. Oh, that has to be their pitch, is it not?
Rosie wears an 8. I'm thinking, boy, she'll be in a 9 probably for 6 months. I'm like, is it worth buying the Caitlin Clark shoe? Well, I looked at buying little kids' shoes, by the way, in the mall.
over it's Christmas. Insane.
Oh my gosh,
it's insane.
I have a buddy who had this a couple years ago, had a kid growing up, and they just grow out of clothes, as I have learned here. And he was buying his son Jordans. Like along the way, I'm like, yo, man, this is not going to fit in a month and a half.
Right.
And he bought multiple Jordans. I mean, they're still expensive. They may not be $200 a pop, but they're at least like $75.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money for something that's going to last, a month or so. So there's Dallas Turner Colts on the clock here.
Couple guys coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Matt Miller from ESPN. We're going to continue our draft analyst a week. We'll certainly do that next week because exactly 7 days away, the NFL draft round one gets underway. Coming up on Thursday, April 25th, pick number 15 for the Colts right there in the middle of round one. But right now we'll focus on the Pacers and focus on Caitlin Clark and the Fever with Scott Agnes from Fieldhouse Files. He was over there yesterday at the opening presser. Scott, I actually want to start with the Clark news we saw late last night, courtesy of Shams Charania. An 8-figure deal with Nike, her own signature shoe as well. I know you're always kind of in tune with the business side of sports as well. Any thoughts to what certainly stands out to me as very deserving and also quite the time for Nike to pounce on really a generational athlete?
Oh, yeah, 100%. It was a case where she comes in and arrives to the WNBA with about a half dozen deals that I'm aware of. And one of them being Nike is kind of lapsed from her college time from today. And right away, I thought it was notable yesterday after the press conference, she took her first photos with the team in a team uniform and was wearing Nike shoes. And to me, that was signaling probably the direction she had already decided or was probably going to go. And you don't usually see a signature shoe this early in the NBA players. It usually takes something special in the first couple seasons, right? You become an MVP candidate. You're all NBA and all-star and kind of a big hit in the league. Something special that has already shown that you're a talented player and you have juice. And for her, we already know she has the juice in terms of what she can contribute and the attention she can provide, and that suggests the interest level that there would be for a signature shoe. She has all the it factors, and, I mean, Kevin, the overriding takeaway for me in listening to her and seeing her yesterday at the Fieldhouse in just a short time is it's unbelievable the way in which she sounds, presents herself, all those things, and she's just 22. Because I've dealt with NBA players who are 30, who have been in the league for 5 and 10 years, who are not nearly as complete, as well-polished, who is so understanding of themselves and what they need to do for others as Caitlin has been so far.
Yeah, I think that's spot on, Scott. Andy and I were talking earlier, Tiger Woods has been a comp. I know Lynn Dunn has mentioned that when she's hopped on our shows this week. But, Tiger's just such a darn robot in front of the media, and especially at a young age. I mean, hell, Andrew Luck. I mean, it was tough to totally, I think, feel like you were truly, could relate or could feel that, even though I do think Luck can have kind of a genuine nature to it. Still, he certainly had a little bit of a wall up. So I do think Clark brings that to the table that, some other athletes at that age with that type of stardom did not have.
Yeah, to me, the first one that comes to mind, just because we're here and we're in it and watched it every day, was Peyton, mm-hmm. right? Like, there would be an edge to it, right? Like, if he needed to motivate teammates or needed to hold players accountable, he would. And it seems like Caitlin is absolutely the same way. Yet, at the same time, if there's a time to raise up teammates or include them in something, right? Like we saw Caitlin take the photo with the rapper out on the court, or at Saturday Night Live, she made sure her teammates were there and watching and able to come up on stage afterward. All those little things matter. The details matter, and she seems to get every single part of it.
Scott Agnes joining us, Fieldhouse Files, on this Thursday on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Before we get to the Pacers, I actually had one on Caitlin Clark as well. You know, whether it be, we made the comparison yesterday, you know, Tiger Woods, the greatness of Tiger was, he raised the purses for everybody else in golf, right? In the numbers, you know, it was like 200%, you know, guys were making more money because of the Tiger effect. A lot of people have talked about, you know, I mean, you know, make about 75K a year there, she will, in those 4 years. I know it goes up, but the contracts, obviously, in the WNBA, that's been a conversation piece ever since she put her name in the draft. Whether it be that, if she can raise the purses, a new TV deal in the next year for the WNBA, or just her play. You know, I know some Diana Taurasi and others have come out and said, hey, this might be a reality check for her. You know, she's going to come into this league and it's going to be different than playing against 18-year-olds in the Big Ten. Whether it be her play, off the court stuff, any of that, what interests you the most about this first season with her here in Indy?
I think the biggest thing to me here, Andy, is how much can the WNBA continue with this momentum, build on this momentum, and help tell stories here of its players, of its teams. I think it's the marketing aspect. And for me, Caitlin Clark is the gasoline that you're pouring on to the fire of what's been great about women's basketball, certainly here in the last few years. Can you ride that wave and continue it on, or do you drop the ball? That's what I'm most curious about. And in terms of some of those different other points, a lot of different nuanced conversations, but like the thing Taurasi had to say, I didn't take any exception with that.
I agree.
Of course there's going to be some challenges, and you're going to see better coaching in some instances, and these elite players will know how to slow or frustrate a player like that at times, or pick up full court if necessary. From a basketball standpoint, I'm absolutely going to be tuned in and curious about those aspects as well. And then with the money, no one's doubting or not wanting these players to get more money, but there's just several different realities that, to simplify, for one, it's like a 5-month season. And for two, the number one overriding factor in all of it is a TV contract. And number three is the overall league revenue. So if we see the TV contract increase and more jersey sales and more player or fans coming to these games to see Caitlin and to see all the other players, it's going to raise the revenue and all these players are going to get paid more. We just need to see that interest level, the fan engagement, and all those different metrics to match what we've seen from Caitlin's fans, for women's basketball fans. We need to see that continue on here in the upcoming season.
Get that league media rights deal up next fall, so October 2025. That will obviously be huge to watch, to see what that next one looks like in terms of the finances. Last one on the Caitlin Clark front from me, Scott. Again, Scott Agnes here from Fieldhouse Files. Some people have asked, and logistically, that's where my biggest question comes into play. I guess I'll start here. WNBA teams still fly commercial, correct?
Absolutely.
So the Fever play, you know, people have asked, hey, will Caitlin Clark be, you know, will she be doing the green flag at the 500 this year? They play in Vegas the night before. I want to say it's a back-to-back. They're somewhere out west, L.A. or Seattle, one of those two, the night before that. So it's a back-to-back out west. They're in Vegas the Saturday night before the race. Maybe this sounds really far-fetched, but she is an endorser of Gamebridge, correct, Caitlin Clark?
She is. That's one of her new deals as of a couple months ago.
And we know Gamebridge is heavily involved, Dan Taurus and Gamebridge heavily involved with IndyCar.
And the presenting sponsor of the race.
And the presenting sponsor of said race. Could we be getting a private plane to fly the, I would assume you would fly the entire team back, along with Caitlin Clark, to have her do the green flag, or am I getting a little bit ahead of myself with that?
I like where your head's at. That's fantastic. I haven't done all the math and done all those considerations just yet. The first one I had considered was, of course, if she's in town next week, she's got to rev it up, right? The trouble is, I'm not sure exactly when she's going to be returning to town. I would assume in the next week or two. But if I'm the Fever, I'm saying, hey, go away and turn off. For a little bit. In fact, that was a question I didn't get a chance, but one of the things I was wondering, Kevin, is we see you, much like we were talking about earlier, turned on and tuned in so often. What are you like away from that? And when you're turned down, what are you doing? Are you just relaxing? Are you a movie person? Like, I can't imagine for having, you know, what that is like. But back to your original question, there are a couple exceptions. I should be clear, by the way, in terms of their travel. This year, they've invested from a fund that they've gathered, which Herb Simon is a part of, by the way, to try to accelerate the growth of this league. I know they're spending at least upwards of $4 million this year on private travel, but they are in unique cases because of the Olympic year. There are way more back-to-back. So if a team is playing on a back-to-back, they can travel and charter a flight. I think once you get to the playoffs, that charter becomes much more of a factor. And then in unique circumstances as well. And a big deal with this is this will become the biggest area in which they'll have to adapt, as well as the biggest area for them to grow and kind of become that they have arrived and proven it, because no one also doubts that they should be traveling charter. The reality is it's a significant expense for a league that is still trying to lay down its roots and grow significantly. So I think that's something you will see change and become normal in the next year or two. As they try to expand, they're going to expand, add one team next year, add another team in the next couple of years, and they'd like to add two more by either 2026 or 2028. That's a big area in which you fund it. So long-winded answers for a great question on all that. If they can make it happen and she's not exhausted and such, that would be an obvious and great choice. And I think it's something that would be approved by your TV rights holder as well, which plays a big factor in it.
Scott, it's too bad you didn't ask that question. What if she would have said, you know what I really like when I tune out? I really like sports talk radio. That's what I enjoy.
Oh, wow.
Listen to a lot of sports talk radio. That would have been great for us, huh? I'm kidding, of course. Scott Agnes with us.
It'd be a dream.
Yeah, Fieldhouse Files here on the Payless Liquors Hotline.
Can't wait for the next Colts on the Clock edition is what she should have said.
Yeah, I just can't wait. You guys.
Big pop quiz hockey question fan.
You break down Dallas Turner's edge rushing ability. Cannot wait for that. Boy, I tell you, let's go to the Pacers, Scott. Got a lot to talk about here. You have the Damian Lillard injury / unhappiness. You have the new coaching staff there with Doc Rivers coming in since the last time these two teams played. You add in the Giannis injury. You know, the Pacers have Pascal Siakam. They're a different team. You know, Buddy Hield's gone, Bruce Brown, and everything else. How do you handicap this series? Which of those storylines interests you as we get things going this weekend between the Pacers and Bucks?
Yeah, no shortages of storylines on top of how many times they've met and Pacers having given them a little edge to them and game ball gate, and I could go on and on. But number one thing, obviously, is Giannis. If he's not nearly half himself, I'm not sure the Bucks have much of a chance in this one. If he's 75% or better, let's say, for example, then it's a grave concern just because 75% of him is better than most players in the league, for one, and he was so dominant. Most teams, including the Pacers, don't have a great answer for solving him. We all remember that 64-point franchise record and what he's been able to do against the Pacers this season. Now, that said, when you get to the postseason, that's when the stars come out. That's when you earn your money as your star. Everybody's watching on national TV and such, which means for the Bucks, that also, what does Damian Lillard look like? How comfortable and content or frustrated is he with that group? In addition to clearly not being 100% as well. And along the same lines, the Bucks have three head coaches on their payroll right now. They fired one, not 50 games into the season. You add Doc Rivers, you want to get your money's worth. You certainly are not expecting a first-round exit. So all the pressure is being felt right now by the Bucks, by Giannis, by Doc and company to figure it out and make it work. And the Pacers are in good spot, relatively healthy, without Benedict Mathurin, however. But other than that, you're somewhat happy-go-lucky. You're somewhat at the level in which you just want to experience all this. And that's not a bad play here, is not many people will pick them, and they can go into this series fully focused. And Halliburton will be enjoying kind of a little home cooking as well, being in his home state. So all this amps up to being a really interesting first round series with plenty of storylines to follow along the way, but Giannis is number one.
Scott, if you remove Giannis, what would be two on that list in terms of the biggest storyline?
Who emerges outside of Dame for the Bucks? Because you just go in assuming
Middleton's had a weird year.
Totally. I mean, there's been some highlights, and then there's been others. You're like, how is he an all-star? Like, I don't know about that. And why I say that again, the star piece, Chris Middleton, just much like Klay Thompson, post-injury and getting older, just hasn't looked himself. Otherwise, that's the obvious one because he's kind of their big three, but not really anymore. So I think Brook Lopez, for example, could have a big impact on the series just because of his defense. He can shoot the long ball, but also have success inside. If he's able to minimize Miles and the Pacers' bigs, for example, that becomes something of key here. And then the Pacers, I'll say this, the Pacers' defense in general, because we've talked about it all season, it's been much improved over the last 2-3 months. It's gotten to the point where it's almost average, which is a huge improvement of how bad it was in those early couple of months, almost unwatchable in those early months of the season where Carlisle was having to blow several early timeouts just to gather everyone in. So we talk defense. Guess what you need in the playoffs? Defense. So from a Pacer perspective, in a macro perspective, that's where I'd go is their defensive end.
Scott Agnes joins us, Fieldhouse Files, on this Thursday. On the Fan, he joins us on the Payless Liquors Hotline. I feel like we know the top eight. We know the five. We know the starting five. We know the first three guys off the bench. Will that lineup shrink? I guess man number nine, Ben Shepherd, Doug McDermott. Do you think it's Shepherd? Do you think we get to the ninth guy? What do you think Carlisle does with his lineups?
Yeah, and he was interesting about it with you guys on his show earlier this week, and start talking about that and talking about those different factors. I would expect four.
Oh, boy.
That was perfect timing.
Man.
I would expect.
Does that mean Bucks and four? Is that a sweep?
Yeah, but if he was going to disconnect, that was the perfect time. Here's what I think about this big important point, KB. I think that his cheek had to hit the off button there. Is he not using AirPods? I see Agnes wearing iPods, right?
You know, is that the deep state getting in there? Carlisle saying, you won't answer this question. I go on that radio show every Tuesday.
The Pacers know that Scott Agnes knows exactly how they're going to play their lineups in this series, and they don't want him saying that on FM radio.
Is that exactly what you're getting at?
I like that.
He's back.
Scott Agnes is back. Scott, that was perfect time. And you go, here's what I think they'll do with the lineups. And then it goes beep, beep, beep. So welcome back. What do you think happens?
That's funny. I did not hear it go off. But let's just call that a traditional radio tease. Holding on the list through this early part of the 9 o'clock hour. No. I think the point that I was making to myself in the room here was talking about, what was it? After Damian Lillard, what the Pacers have to look like, I think, is what I was getting at here. And defensively, what we need to see, what we have to see from them and that end of the floor. The second guy after, if we're not talking Giannis, it could be Brook Lopez because of the way in which he plays both ends of the floor. He can stretch the floor, knock down threes. It's been an incredible case study of it feeling like a player losing their way, and I'm talking like 3, 4, 5 years ago, and just becoming irrelevant and reinventing himself and stretching the floor. And he's been up there for consideration for Defensive Player of the Year, well-deserved many times, for what was a good defensive team, and they've gotten back to those ways a little bit. Does he neutralize Miles Turner or the Pacers' bigs, for example? So I think the point I was trying to make there before getting cut off was just who's that second player for the Bucks? And then what do the Pacers look like defensively? Because defense matters here.
Yeah. Well, we actually got that answer. It was the one. It was,
I forget what my last point was.
It was about the lineup. Like, we know who the top eight guys are,
right?
We know the top eight. Do they, you know, with 2-3 days sometimes between games and the longer timeouts and, you know, things get, you know, you think of lineups get shortened, maybe more of a grinded out game. Does that mean, you know, Ben Shepherd, Doug McDermott? I don't know if you can even play Dougie Buckets, right? I don't know. What do you think about that ninth game? Is it Ben Shepherd, who might get some run here? What do you think happens with the lineups?
Gotcha. My apologies. Yes. What I was getting at there was I think it'll be at least – I think it'll start as a nine-man rotation. You have Shep out there to help with Damian Lillard to throw a different body, to throw some different physicalities between Nesmith, between Nembhard. I don't think it'll be any one guy on their wings out there. So I definitely include Shepherd in that mix. The thing with Doug that makes it interesting, where I think you will need him, is historically what you need to do to beat the Bucks is shoot it well from distance. Is they're going to allow some of those three-pointers. You have to be ready to step up and make them, and that would mean you want Doug McDermott out there, one of the better three-point shooting players on your team. And what's interesting, as we've talked about on this show, is the Pacers' top outside shooters aren't the ones you traditionally think of. And right now, T.J. McConnell is one of those, shooting better than 50% from three-point land in recent games. But you have Obi Toppin and Jalen Smith and some of those bigs. You need some guards to step up, whether it's Nembhard and Nesmith as well. There's been many games this season where Aaron Nesmith stepped into three-pointers in a game. So I think it'll start at nine. Go to eight and nine, and then at times I think you're going to need a Doug McDermott and shooter to step up and knock down shots. But I don't know if that's 20 minutes per game.
Right.
For Doug.
Right. Again, we talked about this earlier. I think it's a must. You've got to stagger Halliburton and Siakam on the floor at all times. You can't have the full hockey sub. You know, I know McConnell and Toppin have been great with that second unit, but you need one of those go-to guys at all times, 48 minutes throughout this series. Scott, cannot wait. It's been a while since we've obviously talked about the Pacers in the playoffs. I know your coverage has been very busy this time of year, so thanks for making a little adjustment with us and hopping on at 9.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, you made a great final point. Pascal Siakam, I feel like that hasn't been talked about enough right now. This is why you went out and got him. And on top of that, he's entering a contract year. So you want this to be a fruitful, fun, and a tease of what could come here if Pascal ultimately does stay.
I'd have to look it up, Scott, but Siakam might have more playoff games than the rest of the team combined.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got to be over, what, 40, 50?
Oh, I bet he does. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about, obviously, they made the real deep run, you know, to winning it all. So, yeah, certainly something that helps you out big time, but that's a great point. Huge offseason for Pascal Siakam. Thanks, Scott.
Yep, thanks, guys.
All right, 1 week from tonight, that is the 2024 MLB NFL draft. Have you ever watched the MLB draft?
We will hopefully not be breaking down the MLB draft. We'll have to know if a kid's going to just skip final year of high school.
We had the Franklin kid last year, right?
There's always local,
Max,
kids.
Max Clark, right?
Yeah.
Was drafted very high, but thankfully we're not talking about that. One of our favorites joining us now from ESPN. You will see him on day three coverage of the NFL draft. Very smart move by ESPN to involve him. He is the one and only Matt Miller. Matt, 1 week from tonight, you will be doing what?
1 week from tonight, I will be in Detroit. So my job on day one and day two is basically to keep the great Mel Kiper as fresh as humanly possible for rounds one, two, and three. So I'll be doing SportsCenter, Get Up, NFL Live. I think I'm on SportsCenter like right up until the moment that the Chicago Bears go on the clock. So I'll be in Detroit running from the set to my hotel room. And as soon as the picks are made, I'll be pounding out like draft analysis for ESPN.com on nights one and two.
I love it. Your first big domino is where in the top 10?
Three. I think the New England Patriots at three are more of a domino than we've been led to believe. I've kind of been pounding the table for the last month about they at least have to pick up the phone or answer the call even. When teams are calling up to trade up, I think if you're New England, I look at all these teams in Chicago, Minnesota, and even Washington that have set the table well for their young quarterback. I don't feel like New England has done that. So I think they at least have to entertain the call to trade out at three. They could stick and pick. They could take Drake May. They could take J.J. McCarthy. I think that'd be a surprise. But I think New England is at least the first spot where, so at about 30 minutes into the draft, the first spot where I'll be curious to see exactly what they're going to do.
Matt Miller joining us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Before we dive into the Colts, who pick at 15, and there's a lot of interesting things around that. Jane Daniels met with Washington on Monday, and his odds then completely flew off the board. He's now minus 300, minus 350 to go second overall. How did we get to the point to where he is now the consensus to go number two overall?
Yeah, I think you're getting to the point where you're talking to people around the league and they're all hearing that. They're all saying that. I don't know that anyone in Washington is saying that, or at least not from the front office. Maybe coaches, maybe ownership is starting to talk a little bit as why that's happening. Adam Peters comes from the San Francisco 49ers. You know, he was in lockstep with John Lynch there for a long time. And they famously were the do not leak front office, right? Like, we don't want anyone to know what we're doing. They were the team that we all thought they were going to take Mac Jones. They took Trey Lance. So I will say that with Adam Peters, he is from that old school mindset of don't let our plans out of the building. Now, that's not to say that, you know, I don't know that Dan Quinn's like calling folks in the media saying, hey, here's who we're drafting. But I think all the winds are blowing in that direction, and it certainly makes sense. You know, Jaden had such a great year. He fits what this team would like to do. You know, I think from a standpoint of Cliff Kingsbury and the type of offense he wants to run, I think with the defensive-minded head coach, you always ask yourself, which quarterback would you least like to play? And I think for me, that is Jaden Daniels in this class.
And Matt Miller, ESPN draft analyst, you're going to see him on day three coverage coming up a week from Saturday. He's with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Matt, let's move to the Colts at 15. Brock Bowers is available. Brian Thomas Jr. is available. And let's say Quinion Mitchell is available as well. You're Chris Ballard. You go where?
Oh, my goodness. That's tough. I actually think I go Quinion Mitchell in that scenario. And I know it might be a surprise to fans who you hear about Brock Bowers. He's a top 10 player for almost everyone. But I think it's harder to find a number one corner than it is to find a number one tight end. And I think the value of a number one corner is more valuable than a number one tight end. So I look at it, I would go Quinion Mitchell. I think the tight end depth is better than the corner depth as well. It's like I look at the corner class, Quinion Mitchell, I have him as the number two corner, but he's right behind Terrion Arnold, from Alabama. In round two, I've got corners rated in round two, but they're inside guys. You know, it's like Mike Sangerstil, inside guy. Max Melton, he could play on the outside, but doesn't have the ceiling of a Quinion Mitchell. TJ Tampa doesn't have that ceiling. When I'm looking at round two tight ends, like I think I'd rather come out of this draft with Quinion Mitchell and JT Sanders than I would coming out of the draft with Brock Bowers and TJ Tampa. Like, so when I think about how I could stack the board right to this team, maybe I'm holding out hope here. Like, I was always a huge fan of Jelani Woods when he was in college, and maybe I'm just holding out hope selfishly here that he's going to become that guy. But I don't look at this tight end room and see, oh my God, they have to get a starting tight end here. I don't see that. Like, it would be nice, but it does feel like a luxury. Whereas, you know, you got corners, Juju Brent, second round last year, Dallas Flowers, who went to college like 30 minutes from where I live at Pitt State. I like those guys. Kenny Moore is obviously a great, great nickel player, but I think the need at corner is much bigger than the need at tight end.
Is that the Gorillas of Pittsburgh State?
It is. The Gorillas.
Yeah. Shout out to Dallas Flowers coming off the torn Achilles.
Look at you knowing that. Matt Miller with us here, NFL draft analyst for ESPN, ESPN.com. Listen, ultimately, none of us know exactly what's going to happen with trades and everything else, and there'll always be a couple picks that will be off the board. But your hunch, if the Colts stay at 15, do you think they get the first corner, or do you think someone goes before them and they have the option to get the second or third guy there? How do you think that works out?
I think that is a great question. And I've been trying to run that scenario of, like, where does the first corner go? And it's hard to find that team without a trade back. Like, if the Chargers trade back from 5 to 11, they could take a corner. Their corners are pretty bad. Denver could take a corner at 12 if they don't make a move for a quarterback. So finding that first corner, you're almost always in that scenario of, well, if this doesn't happen, this could happen. Indy is kind of that sweet spot for the first corner. I think you have to look at Denver as a team that could do it as well. The Raiders need a tackle so bad. Like, the Raiders could certainly go corner, but you're very, very well could be that team that, hey, first corner off the board, whether that be Arnold or Mitchell, it's kind of a, you know, preference of scheme fit at that point. But the Colts are right there. Again, if we see some teams go tackle like Denver, like the Raiders, then you're starting to watch those corners fall down the board.
At NFL Draft Scout on Twitter, Matt Miller spent last night watching the Royals and White Sox on TV. Oh. So pray for his
God bless
sanity there with that.
That's
Royals.
Why I thought we were
fan.
Talking MLB draft. You know, MLB draft. I was ready to go.
Yeah, I know you've been watching a lot of SEC starters on a Friday night here. To mention with all the SEC talent, NFL wise. Okay, Matt. When we go to bed a week from now tonight, when we go to bed Thursday night, will Michael Penix's name been called yet?
I don't think so. And like, you do hear like that he could go in the top half of the draft, but you hear that more from media people than NFL people. I haven't spoken to one team that thinks that he's going to go in the top half of the draft. Now, I hope he does. I really do. Like, I think you root for every player, you know, to go early. That would be fantastic for him. But as of right now, I have not found a team who says, hey, we like him up here. I think everyone kind of assumes the Raiders might do it, but 13 feels really early for me. And I think it's more likely that we would see the Raiders try to come back in late first round to make that pick as opposed to doing it at 13.
Matt, obviously it's mock draft season. I thought it was a really cool idea and execution by you to do the scouts predict the top 10 picks. You reached out to scouts from around the league and they made the selections 1 through 10. I thought just one thing that stood out to me was Quinion Mitchell, because he's been a popular name to the Colts. He was 8 with Raheem Morris to the Falcons there, and for what it's worth, it was an AFC South area scout who made that selection, as you pointed out in your story. Anything scout-related with that mock draft stand out to you with the top 10?
Yeah, you know, the fact that J.J. McCarthy didn't go in the top 10 really shocked me, and I think that goes to show that, you know, where J.J. is ranked versus where he's expected to be drafted are very different. You know, he is not a player that you talk to teams and they're saying like, yeah, this is a top 10 player. That does not happen. It's more so, well, this team needs a quarterback, so, you know, he's going to get forced into the top 10. It's certainly much more that case than the other of where he's, you know, actually ranked and expected to go. I look at Byron Murphy from Texas. The scouts had him going 9 overall to the Chicago Bears. That one actually makes a lot of sense to me. I love Byron Murphy. I think he's my number 12 overall player. I'm a huge fan of his. And you look at Chicago, if the receivers are off the board, then it does kind of make sense that Chicago could go with an interior defender. The value of those guys are only continuing to go up. You know, we just saw a boatload of them get paid this offseason. So I do look at Chicago and say, okay, if the receivers are off the board and you don't trade back, take Byron Murphy. And Matt Eberflus's defense, you guys know Matt Eberflus's defense. You need that 3-tech. You need that interior pass rusher. And Murphy's the best one. And a draft class is pretty shallow at the 3-technique position.
Matt Miller joining us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. You can check him day 3 of the draft. A ton of stuff on TV, radio, ESPN.com. He's their NFL draft analyst. You know, it's an odd question, but so a couple weeks ago, there was kind of a report about Malik Nabers, the wide receiver from LSU. Maybe he was a high maintenance guy. You know, guys in the NFL had talked about that. And I don't think he's going to get to 15. We've had the conversation if he or others would drop, if Ballard would move up. Nabers did come out a couple weekends ago, though, Matt, and, you know, basically said, you know, they got to pick on someone in the draft process. And I guess this year, it's going to be me, but I haven't seen anything else in the last couple weeks on that. So what do you think about those reports a couple weeks ago? Anything with Nabers that would that you would worry about, or that you think he might, you know, fall in the draft coming up in a week?
And I think it is, like, it's natural this time of year for things to come out. I'm not saying they're manufactured. I think it's, you know, as teams get information on players, as teams talk to people like me in the media, these things do come out. Now, I'm not breaking news here. This is public record. You know, Nabers was arrested on gun charges in 2023. The charges were dropped. I think it was something like on Bourbon Street, maybe, if I'm remembering correctly.
Mm-hmm. So it was.
You know, that comes out, and I think there are going to be people that rush to judgment on that and say, oh, red flag, off field. You know, charges were dropped. You know, certainly, you know, it's always it's something that you have to do your due diligence on, especially when it's something like a gun charge. You have to dig into that. I haven't heard from any teams that have said Malik Nabers is going to drop in the draft because of character, because of off field. I have not heard that. In fact, I've heard, you know, the opposite, that the closer we get to the draft, more teams do like him, you know, and that I reported this back at the Senior Bowl, that there were teams even back then who had him as the number one receiver. And I think that list of teams has only grown as people have dug into the tape. So, you know, Neighbors, Odunze, Marvin Harrison Jr. are all incredibly talented. I think there is a legitimate debate about which one is the best. And I think if you talk to all 32 teams and they're honest, it might be split, you know, into thirds as to who the best one is in this class. So I don't think that's anything that we're going to see affect him a week from now. You know, he's still going to be selected very, very early in the top nine, definitely.
Matt, we got about 60 seconds left. We can't thank you enough for your time. This is probably asking you to predict a correct, perfect, 100% NCAA tournament bracket. If I give you one name for Mr. Irrelevant, you're on the stage, day three,
wow.
ESPN,
I like it.
One name, the final pick of this year's NFL draft, Matt Miller.
Wow, let me go Imani Bailey, running back, Boise State.
Bailey,
that's a deep cut. I was not expecting to go there. That's good.
You had a name, Matt. That's impressive.
You had a name.
TCU. And it wasn't
TCU.
A punter.
I went wrong college, though, TCU. I was thinking of a different running back. Imani Bailey from TCU. I'll go there.
You could have said Alabama or Pittsburgh State, and I would have believed you on that. Matt Miller, great stuff with ESPN. Again, he'll be on the TV coverage coming up a week from Saturday. Matt, always enjoy our conversations. Thanks for making time for us.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you.